It's Harney White's Miracle Nutrition, starring Harney White. Join Harney as he takes you on a journey on the radio. Oh, my friends, welcome. Thank you for joining me on Harney White's Miracle Nutrition with Harney White. Now, why do you say your name twice like that? Well, I don't know, but a lot of people ask me about the name of the show, and I say, well, the Harney White part is me. And they go, no, it's the Miracle Nutrition part. I don't understand. Is it a show about nutrition? And I say, well, yes, in a way it is. Well, what about the miracles? Is it a show about miracles? And I say, in a way, it is. Well, what is that way? And then I say, I don't know, or I forgot the question. And it doesn't really matter what the question is, my goodness, because I'll tell you what the miracle is that we get nutrition out of something that isn't food. And you say, how is that possible? Like when I eat wax grapes and they sustain me? Do they? Can you live on wax food? Oh my goodness, you know, Charlie Chaplin in a film one time, rather than actually eat a shoe, which is what the script called for, decided to have a shoe manufactured of something edible. And the thing they decided on was leather, because it's made from beef, I think. Or it's the same animal that beef comes from. They might not make the leather from beef. I wonder if that's, you take a steak, can't be used anymore, you say, this would make a lovely men's shoe, some kind of slip-on or something. If you just, and I've seen this on Instagram now, you take a couple of steaks you're not using, stick some hobnails in them, and slip your foot in there, and you can wear them. They have to get dried out first. There's a whole process. But what if our souls, we don't have souls, well, of our feet, oh, I'm sorry. No, I was talking about the other kind of souls. I just didn't have the courage of my conviction. Oh, I can't prove you have a soul. And judging on what I've encountered with a lot of people, you probably don't. But if you did, you know, there's that part of your heart, your emotions, your feelings, things that aren't your elbows, you know, the subtle you. Not everything is your stomach. Now, your stomach does need food to survive, like we said, like grapes, wax grapes, or junket, or crackers, Zwieback. I could just name food all day. That's the only three I can think of, but other things can be food, too. But, you know, that's not all that we require. Our hearts crave something besides food. Well, it's drugs, but besides drugs. It's something subtler than that. It's something that our stomach can't use, or I guess our brain can use it. But what could possibly nourish us in that way? What is the miracle nutrition? Now, a lot of your religious figures, they don't do this much now, but back in the day, a great way to become a religious figure was to what they call food transformation. Where you take something and say, hey, I got this ham sandwich, and I would like it to be something like a roast or like that. What's the one that's wrapped in the, where you take a filet and you wrap it in the, do that. Could you make it that? And then the religious figure would say, sure. Is there any beverage you want me to transform? Maybe make it alcoholic. And they, well, there you can do that. And you say, yes, I can make any beverage alcoholic. And there's only two people that can do that. One are people that are demigods, and the other are people that have been to prison, because I think they do that all the time. You know, if you can get me some shoe polish, I'll make you butter, that kind of thing. And they can, it's great. Every prisoner is a chemist. And I see that on YouTube. You can watch it now. So I'm going to show you how to make, you can make, grape juice into both, I think, tattoo ink and a fine Burgundy. And you do that all by things you just find around the prison. Like, there's all kind of yeast in its natural state, apparently, many places in the prison. And that's a wonderful thing. I know you say the store-bought stuff's best, of course. But in a pinch, you can make... Do you ever make wine from baking yeast, from grocery store baking yeast? You can do it. All you need is you need some, like, Sunny D and some of that baking yeast and some really compelling physical, psychological reason to do it. And then there you go. And you can craft all sorts of things. I remember seeing Star Trek, Captain Kirk was on a planet. And he was fighting a lizard man who's also been put there. And they were put there by a third rock people, I think, to fight, to be, pitted against one another. And Captain Kirk, because he had that useless chemistry degree, he said, finally, I can use it. And on there's little mounds of different chemicals laying around, and he put them together, and he made, I don't remember it exactly, but I think he made some kind of automatic weapon, or blew him up. He might have blown up the lizard man. And then when he got, finally made a universal translator, and the lizard man, as he's dying, said, I was just their servant. Like that. He didn't, because you met, oh, I felt so bad. I thought you were a warrior. No, I'm an elderly waiter. And that's why you got to wait. Before you blow up a foe on another planet, find out. Sometimes you're being deceived by some megalomaniac interstellar nut job who just wants to manipulate people and everything. I'd never do that to you. I'm trying to satisfy your need for a certain type of spiritual nutrition the same way as a vending machine satisfied your need for true nutrition from food. So I'm the spiritual version of a bag of Andy Cap hot fries or some such thing like that. Bugles. Do they make them anymore? That's what's so disgusting about this machine. It has nothing but discontinued snack items. And eat them at your own risk. Some of them are from Japan, and they've got shrimp and or squid in them. So let's see how that's aged over the past decades. There's sweet, sour, bitter, salty, something. Sour, bitter, salty, sweet, live, love, laugh, something, and umami. And then there's also something called ancient umami. And that's when you have, it's the smell of decades old fish flakes or something. Because time can add so much to food. There's certain foods that we have aged. Can any of you name them? Any of you want to name some foods that are aged? Whiskey. Whiskey's one. That's the type of food that we age. What's another one? Thousand-year egg. Thousand-year egg is an aged food. What's another one that we might age? Pickles. Pickles. Sauerkraut. Sauerkraut's one that might have to age. What's another one? Beef. Yes, they have aged beef. I've never understood that. That's horrifying, I guess, but that does something to it. Anything, anybody else aged? So when I told you I went to the Kentucky State Fair, and they had a country ham competition. That's a large, salted, preserved ham. I don't think it needs refrigeration, and it can be eaten as ham up to 200, 300 years from now or something. I think that's what it is. And they auction them off, and you buy them as a donation to something. I don't know. You make a huge donation to the farmers of Farmington. And it was purchased by a well-known political donor. And they paid tens of millions of dollars for this ham. Well, I mean, symbolically. They're not going to make, but I thought how many sandwiches they could make, though. So that gets, but now what do they do with the ham, is I'm wondering. I wonder if they want it, we want it delivered. We bought it. And we want to taste what a $10 million ham sandwich tastes like. I think if it really was a $10 million ham sandwich, the ham would actually be like the flesh of a prince from somewhere or something.
Yes, it's not ham. You know that, right? It's royalty.
That could be, oh my goodness, I'm glad we don't eat people. Or there would be, it'd be so sad if you were eaten as a person, and, but you weren't considered like, you know, Wagyu. You were low grade. I don't want that. We don't want a world of cannibalism. My goodness. No, I was just talking about snack food foods and how to lighten your heart. That way, I'm not sure snack foods lighten your heart as much. They make a protective layer of fat around it, and that is beautiful. Not as much can get to you that way. And we want to shield ourselves a little. But the best way is to take that protection off of our hearts symbolically. And it's okay to feel things. My goodness, we're always afraid. I don't want to ever give up that sensitivity, because now you can learn to have it not hurt you. But I need the sensitivity to observe the world more.
What do you mean?
Well, I like to know what's going on. I'm not afraid of true things. And I want to know the real consequences of my behavior, let's say. Or so I let things in. Oh, I let my heart break, because I know that it's not really breakable. If you were to take a real human heart, and I don't advise doing this, dropping it on the floor, a thing it doesn't do, unless it's been soaked with liquid nitrogen, doesn't shatter. It doesn't bounce, I guess. It just goes like that, maybe, like a wet sock. But it certainly doesn't break. I mean, it'd be broken. You couldn't use it again. That's for sure. If they say, if you drop your heart, that's you're done for, pretty much. Say, I can wash it off. I don't think so. I don't think you can rinse it under the sink. I don't know. I've never dropped a human heart that was currently in use. I would say that's probably something that's the domain of a surgeon. Might have to hold a beating heart in their hands. Can you imagine that? So I held your stomach in my hands. I've only had hernia surgery, so I don't want to think about what they're holding. But I got it all back. That's what I was concerned about. So when I was everything's there except the hernia. And that wasn't really a thing as much as a condition. So they put back everything that was trying to, my intestines were trying to escape through the tiniest hole, just like a prisoner takes a spoon and digs the smallest hole in San Quentin or something, or Alcatraz. And then, and then out it pops. And then it has a raft there waiting for them somehow. Oh, Alcatraz would be a rough one. Shark-infested waters, which I've seen people swimming in recreationally. So I don't know how the sharks probably are not doing their job like they used to. Nothing is as much. Everything's changed. My goodness. As a time traveler, I feel that way. I like to go a lot of times to the Ordovician age, because there's a shallow sea where I am here. And it's just nice to get your feet in among the little corals. And there's no animals, because there's no animals. It's lovely. Just little things swimming. I don't even know what. I guess they're coral. It's fun. A fun thing to do is go back and leave a footprint, and then go forward in time and look for it. See if it's still there as a fossil. Because sometimes I've done that. Walk along the beach and say, I hope somehow this beach is never molested for millions of years. The chances are remote, but you don't know. And I go back and I leave little clues in the past all the time. My goodness, it's fun. Every time I've lost a tooth, I've gone back and buried it in the desert. Who knows? How many teeth have you lost? More than I have. I don't know what's going on there. I've always been able to regenerate every part of my body. I don't know. It's just a gift or something genetic, and I take it for granted, but I've been alive now a really long time, and I'm thinking maybe that's contributing to that. You know, something will happen and I'll grow a new one. So, golly, I thought everybody was like that for a while. So maybe I'm eternal. Gosh, I hope not. Part of me hopes not. And what's that part? Financial part, hopes. Because I've already blown it. So, really, death is built into my financial plan. And that's how I'm going to wipe all my debt clean at some point. For myself. Maybe not for my heirs or anything. Bless them. Oh, my gosh. What matters is that I won't go to prison. And I certainly don't want to go there. There's so much that I would learn, like I said, about making things out of just household items. Are there household items in a prison? Are there prison items in a household? That's what I want to know. I think so. I was thinking about having a sally port put into my house where you had to go into a sort of caged area, stop there, then go in to the rest of the house or the area. And that way, there's fewer solicitors. The food delivery people don't like it so much, but I overtip. So it's not bad. There's nothing wrong with running your house like a prison. At some point, I don't mind when I have guests, I say all of their doors shut and lock immediately at 10 o'clock. And they're all fine with it. And as long as I have coffee, and I think they do that for you. I've never been to prison, but I wonder, I bet they do have a little coffee for you. That'd be cruel if they didn't. I can't imagine, no coffee for you. What I do? And then they tell you, and you go, well, that is pretty despicable, but I can't imagine what you'd have to do to not deserve a nice hot bracing cup of coffee in the morning. Probably something pretty bad. And I like that I can't imagine what that is. I could probably sum it up if I really wanted to, but I don't. And you don't want me to. Because we are escaping a little bit together. Oh my gosh, if you were to go on what's a glass bottom tour, you say? Well, a glass bottom tour is where you go and you look at these people who, bless your hearts, poor things, were born with glass bottoms. And so they can't really sit down like you or I, because they're also this very delicate glass. And if they sat down and their bottom shattered, blah, 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 who knows? Everything is compromised. And there you go. It's like a sort of exoskeleton for them. No. I'm kidding. Oh, my goodness. You're kidding, but my child just screamed and left the room. Oh, I'm sorry. I was just being silly. It's so... Some language is so similar, you know, you can make jokes like that. And anytime I hear the word bottom, like I've become 9 years old again. That 789 years old again. And it's crazy, but it's hard not to, but I said, but very difficult not to word associate with things like that. Like that. When there's a planet called rectum, and Uranus, and every time we say that, people go, oh, ha, 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 you know. And I've been told I don't like, to cut back on the scatological stuff a little more. And I go, what's that? And they go, scatological. I say, like Scatman? And they say, yes, exactly, like Scatman Crothers, like scatting. What's that? I know what it is, but what is it in the jazz context? Well, how do you know I'm using it in a jazz context? Okay. Anyway, it's BSing with your mouth. Ba-ba-boo, making silly poo-poo sounds. Not poo-poo sounds, literally. But, you know. What's that? Are those words? No, it's just nonsense. It's just scat. And here, I'll demonstrate it for you. No, I wouldn't do that. My goodness. Never scat. That's. I think at the actual station, they've got that up. That says don't do that. A lot of things. No rapping. I've got signs. I've sell no rapping signs. And they're just for my friends. They're not for real rappers or anything. They're welcome to do it. I guess it's just for people using the bathroom. Like the signs, were they only in Florida? But there was a sign that a lot of people had. And it said, I don't swim in your toilet. Therefore, now this makes me think that maybe it was like a logic, one of those logic problems, or it's from the Greek philosophers, because it was like, it's an if-then thing. It could also be rudimentary programming language, but it said, I don't swim in your urinal, no, in your toilet, or I think it said toilet or something like that. Please don't pee in my pool, in my swimming pool. Don't what? Don't relieve yourself. Don't urinate in my swimming pool. What do you mean? Do people do that? While they're swimming. Oh, I thought you meant just like stand there on the side and take a pee into it. No, 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 no. Some folks and they're floating around might want to relieve themselves as they're swimming. And you go, oh, like I do when I'm mowing the lawn. No, well, I don't know. I better walk through the sprinkler so nobody knows. And they would have this sign up because I suppose, I don't know whether in the 70s, I think that was a real problem. And people were, you know, just using, they didn't know the difference between, they see that big pool out back and they go, that's a big toilet. And you go, it's not a toilet. And they go, it's shaped like a toilet. And so they just, I'm going to jump into it and go, no, don't. That's crazy. And so they'd have these signs and they would send them at a lot of the places that, at least in Florida, at the same place they'd sell Florida-themed novelties. Florida-themed novelties are usually like ceramic private parts that you can use as an ashtray and they say Florida on them. Or I've been to Florida, my butt or something. It was real lowbrow. And that's how they used to advertise Florida. Say, come on, it's all fruit and dirty jokes. Who wouldn't want to move there? And so you move there and it's nothing but novelty napkins with glamorizing alcoholism. Another fun thing too. A little, did you ever get for your bar? I'm going to buy you stuff for your bar. I'm going to buy you so many little novelty tchotchkes for your bar that you won't be able to use it as a bar. I'm going to get you a lamp and it's a, like a tiny lamppost. Pretty big though, maybe almost 2 feet tall. Says bar on it. And then leaning against it is an alcoholic, like maybe a hobo alcoholic even. I don't know. He's wearing a top hat. Lord, I don't know what he was just. Could have been just at a riding competition. Or he could be a master of ceremonies for a circus or anything. What do you call those? Ringmaster. But he's loaded now. And he's leaning up against this post. Says bar. And it's a beautiful piece of art. It's a cautionary tale. And you put that on your bar and some other things. My grandparents would always have something that maybe they got on a cruise or something, like a bottle opener that's on a Haitian sculpture, because Haiti is well known for their little bar items. And always baffled me. By the time I knew what everything was, I was very baffled by the world and our rituals and the things our families did. And it all felt very strange to me. And then I discovered my people, the Flintstones. And they just say, now I've recognized it's like being the goose among the ducklings. I'm an ugly duckling, but I'm a hell of a goose. And that's why I felt like that with I'm a terrible person, but I'm a hell of a cartoon character. These are my people. I know this. I'm not a white. I'm a stooge. I know they're not cartoons, but they're sort of like virtually so. Because you can, any cartoon is like, can you do something to somebody that would normally maim them? But it's just funny, a funny inconvenience. Because they're a cartoon. You can't really hurt them. And so I'd be like that. I want to go someplace and be something that can't be hurt, like that cartoon, where my life makes sense, where I am appreciated and loved because my last name is a pun on something geological. I don't know. This is Hardy. Hardy what? Hardy Limestone member. Oh, Mr. Limestone member. I could do better than that, but I didn't, because I couldn't think of anything offhand. But that's the kind of wonderful creative world. That's what I wanted to live in. When I was young, I'm not saying that it's the world's so different now. And we had, a lot of you don't read the classics, or not read them, watch them. And we had a fella, you understand his work, but I don't think you know the depth of it. And that's Sherwood Schwartz. And it's so funny that his name is almost the opposite of mine. The opposite of Sherwood is Hardy. But I mean, he's a fine human being. But he gave us Gilligan's Island. What do you mean he gave us? He gave it to us. That's our inheritance. Isn't that beautiful? That somebody we don't even know gave us that gift. and now it's embedded in our imagination in the same way as, oh, I don't know, the Nativity used to be in the imagination of previous generations. It is now so deep in my psyche and my worldview that I do almost confuse this imaginary island, this island that's really a set in Los Angeles. And it's a real island inside of me now because I watched it and I've been Gilliganized. And those episodes become like myths and fables to me. Cautionary tales, you know? And thank goodness that Sherwood Schwartz, in his work Brady Bunch and Gilligan's Island, was trying a little bit to embrace some sort of nominal sense of morality. You know, let's have an ethical system for both. Not perfect, you know? But he wanted groups that cared for one another at the end of the day. So that's good. And then everything else he got spectacularly wrong, and everything else is horrifying. But isn't that a beautiful thing right at the center? You ever get like a pastry or something, and there might be a slice of apula, a succulent apple in there, or apula. I don't know where that word came from. I guess Scott Apula I was thinking of. But the rest of the pastry might be rubbish. But you dig out that beautiful center. And that's just the way for so many things. So much art you have to crop. And you crop this show probably. Orally. You crop it. You take things out. Certain things you remember and you focus on. And other things are chaff. Oh my goodness. Here he is. Here's Chaff Chaff. What do you have to say today, Chaff Chaff? He's haven't decided what he is. I think he's an alpaca. If he is, let's say maybe he's a goat. I want to get another character that's an animal. I was inspired after going to the fair. Meh. Like that. Just a goat or a sheep or something. And that's what he says. You know, like, hey, Tony. Meh. Meh. I know that sounds a little like Edward G. Robinson, but he was a sheep. And a lot of people don't know that. Anyway, I'm not going to go into it. Yeah, that's let the man rest in peace, right? My goodness. Meh. Meh. Ah. But he did do that all the time. Bless him. He had reasons to do it. He was going through so much. We really don't know what other people are going through, what their lives are like, do we? We all leave what they say, lives of quiet desperation. I don't know that was said before social media. No longer is people's desperation quiet. It's quite vocal. Voluminous, loud declarations of desperation and discontent. Oh, moaning, in fact. Gloom, despair, and agony on me. Oh, deep, dark depression, excessive misery. Oh, if it weren't for hee-haw of something, something. They were all on acid. That's what I heard. Thank you. That was one of the Hee Haw themes, if you ever saw it. If you're old enough to have seen that show, there was a wonderful, boy, we're just drowning in Southern stereotypes back then. It was quite something. And God, that was crazy. And they all turned out to be true. But they weren't at the time. Isn't that funny? It was almost like a prediction of the future. Now we got all those things. Now they all exist. My goodness. Hee-haw, real hee-haw, real Green Acres are out there. Just the product, the imagination of writers now. It's become reality. Isn't that dangerous? Something like Barney Miller. Boom, now it's real. That happened a lot of things. Star Trek, Star Wars got predicted. Star Trek, they had some kind of device. Now they have it. Star Wars predicted that there'd be these cantinas that people have noses that look like those things you blow at soccer games. Trumpety things. Zazuzazazazaphone. I'm not getting anything right. Oh, my goodness. All I'm trying to do is convey what's in my heart to you. And I have no real language for it. There's no perfect language for feelings. A lot of them can only be expressed in ways that feel very primal, right? I mean, when you say, did you ever feel so full of gratitude that you can't express yourself in words? Let's say someone's coming over to your house and they bring you a hostess gift. Let's say it's some kind of bourbon-flavored barbecue sauce. And they didn't have to do that. And you know it's expensive because you saw it for sale at the bookstore. And you go, oh, I know what it took to get that. How thoughtful. And instead of saying thank you, you go, oh, oh. Oh, oh, like that, just emotional vulnerability, express yourself in a primal way, and they get very upset and scared and start recommending different specific brands of anti-anxiety and antidepressants to you, and you go, it's not that, it's gratitude. I know it seems over the top, but I just, my emotions, they overtake me. I'm glad they don't keep me angry a lot. There's been various stages in my life where I was angry a lot, and I don't remember about what, but I remember different stuff would make me angry, and it would end up working against me. So I think I was playing some kind of trick on myself, and now I don't do that so much anymore. Now I have other emotional pitfalls, of course. You know, like nostalgia or sentimentality, but I find them very easy to overcome because every time I revisit a fond memory, it's stale. Every time you can't go home again because it's all covered with mold. That's the thing. Things move on. I remember, it's in the George Orwell novel, Coming Up for Air. The fella is discontented with his life, and he just wants to return to the way it was before his life got into a rut and became, his position became inextricable. He couldn't pull himself out and go in a different direction, so he abandons his life for a day. He runs away, and he runs to an old fishing hole that he loved. And that he remembers whiling away the time as a kid. But now it's overgrown. It's on somebody's property. It's overgrown with brambles and everything. There's no fish in it. It's all stinky. I might be adding all this part, but he was probably subtler than that. But it wasn't anything that he remembered, and it was obvious that it wouldn't be. The nature of everything is it changes and grows, and things aren't where you left them. All memories are like, you know, leaving something on a moving train. If you just go back to where the train was, you know, it's still on the train somewhere down there. It's moved on. The planet isn't where you left it. Nothing's where you left it. So every day you got to go out in the world again and look and notice. What do you mean? Be aware. I think a big trap we all have is we think we got things figured out, and you go into the world with a dated map. Your map is dated. You ever drive around with a dated map? I mean, sometimes it's not so bad. You go, well, I should be. My map says I'm driving in a field right now. I had an online thing like that. I had a car once that had the map was built into the car. So the map was installed when the car was made, and then it wasn't updated. It wasn't like now with the. And I remember all the time I'd be like, oh, it says I'm driving in a field. This is great, yet I know I'm on a road. So the map is even more worthless than the lived experience. Isn't that like some of our traditions? Aren't they maps to worlds that no longer exist? Don't they often tell us that there is not a bridge here where we know there is one because we're standing on it, that there is no road or building here when we know in fact there is? Why trust a map that's dated? Why not update it and keep it updated based on new information? Roads are always built because paths that are traveled get established and turned into roads. That's the way it was in ancient times. They'd have chariots go down there in Rome and make these ruts, and that wheelbase became the basis for the road width. And now we still, to this day, chariots have the same width as a Ford Mustang. I don't think that's true. I don't know if it's true. I don't care. But something like that. I think it could be that. Let's just have it be that. It's the same feeling. My goodness. I like that about... I think misinformation might be a misnomer. Miss. Do you think? I don't know. If there's just information. And some information is incorrect. I don't know whether the word information implies that it's logical or true or can be replicated. I'm not even sure. You say, well, that's exclamation or something. I don't know. It doesn't have to have a meaning to be information. I don't know. There's a whole field of study. I know there is. I like ignoring it. Isn't that great? You could read more about it. Shh, 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 shh. I don't want to. I want to noodle it through like I'm the first person to think of this. Now, I'm not going to get on the internet and announce that I'm thinking about it, but I do like to. I'll go and read about things in a minute, but I like to see if I can figure out where the problems lie before I go and read somebody else's ideas, because boy, oh boy, I don't think I've ever read a book where I didn't go, at least while I'm reading it, yeah, yeah. And it's not until I put it down and start thinking about it that I go, well, wait a minute. But I don't think that while I'm reading something, because I got to let it all in. And I figure, well, when I'm done, I'll go and be critical. I find it very difficult to be critical on the fly. Because the fly didn't do anything. Fly likes landing on poo and walking around. He's got all his eyes, compound eye. That'd be lovely. I just got the one. It's a very, very boring and inaccurate, my eyes. I would rather have them than not. But I'm no fly. Oh, my gosh, and you aren't either, friend. I hope that you let me into your heart the way you would let somebody who's a worker on your property, would let them into your bathroom. And I know it's very similar. Letting someone into your heart is like letting them into the bathroom because you don't know what they're going to do in there. Hopefully, just number one or a line, but they could be doing anything in there. And just get in, get out is... And my heart's like that too. Get in, get out. Just do your business, get out of there. No, my gosh, you can linger, and you do linger in my heart because of my gratitude, which is real. Oh, I'm not kidding you. I'm not, I'm a lot of things, but I'm not what you're thinking right now. I understand that my unique position here as an unconventional broadcaster on an established radio station with a very large and wonderfully informed, free-thinking listenership. And here I am. And that opportunity is not a small thing to me. It means the world. And every time that I approach the microphone, I approach it cautiously, because I don't want to run into it like Corey Feldman. And so, would you like me to do it? I'll do it just as jokingly. When I approach the mic, like that. When I approach the microphone, though, to broadcast and to speak to you, I do think about the consequences of my speech. Words are powerful. They've convinced me of many things. They've moved me. They made me cry, made me laugh. They are a direct conduit to my brain. My ears have no lids. So it gets in there and I start thinking about it. So the things I say affect me. And I know words can wound. They can hurt. They can set you back. They can discourage. And you say, well, that's up to the person. Yeah, but here's the thing. You know, if they're coming from me, and the hurt and the discouragement or whatever is not what I intended, then that is frightening to me. And it is also not how I want to live my life. I want to understand the consequences of my behavior. Sometimes it's very difficult to do that and to face it and to think about what I'm saying. To have... to say, what is my agenda? What am I trying to get across? In what way am I clearly wasting everyone's time? How, though? Because there's wasting and there's wasting. There's unharmful wasting, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's a point at which the wasting of time is the observer's burden. That's your responsibility. But then the wounding is on me. So it's one thing if you just want to sit there and watch a bird, but if the bird pecks your eyes out, that bird's a nasty bird. I blame the bird. That's not your fault. So have I inadvertently pecked anyone's eyes out with my words? I, like you, am a confused and frightened person.
I'm not confused and frightened.
Well, I, like your boss at work, I'm a confused and frightened person. I really don't know what I'm supposed to be doing in life. I am wounded often by words I don't intend to be, but sometimes the thing I think is pride is sometimes low self-esteem.
So, well, I've been insulted.
How is it that you can be insulted unless you've got this vulnerability? Oh, unless you care about it, unless you're self-conscious about what you think is a weakness. Otherwise, might not be able to get to you. So I kind of only care about the things that my words are doing, like little golems when I'm not there. Are they jumping out of my mouth like little tiny scary G.I. Joes? Every time I say a word, this 1 foot man that looks like a G.I. Joe, and what's he wearing? Tiny white shirt, tiny khaki pants. He jumps out and he runs through the radio wires and he jumps into your car and he starts dancing on your dashboard. Blah, 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 blah. And you go, who is this little homunculus that Hardy White has birthed with his verbiage? And now it is trying to be over here conveying something to me, having consequences, living beyond the confines of his brain, his lips, his microphone. It has its own life over here. Sit down, little G.I. Joe man. Okay. I like the way that you don't really look like Woody from Toy Story or anything. You just look like, or even the G.I. Joe from Toy Story. Is there one? I don't know. I don't think so. This little army man.
Right, right, right.
So, and you have bare feet.
I know. I can't get the boots on.
Really?
Oh, G.I. Joe boots are a drag. They're hard to get on.
They are?
Yeah, because my foot, look at my foot. And then if the little joint there is not lubed well, I can't get them on. It's pointless.
You're right. You can just go. Anyway, what information are you bringing me today? Little man that was created by Hardy's words and thoughts.
Oh, well, today I just wanted to share with you how imperfect love and affection is from some of your friends, but how it still matters. And don't, maybe you ought to lower your standards a little more.
Really?
Yeah, I think you can number among friends people who are just, aren't even, you don't even like.
Why is that?
Well, you know, because as long as they stay in your life, you can have some influence.
Ah,
as long as they're still in your life, kind of caring for you, even if it's a little bit, then what you have to say and what you feel matters.
All right.
Once you reject somebody, what you say and feel doesn't matter.
All right.
Now you don't matter to one another.
Yeah.
So it's like family. Now, sometimes it's hard, but if you can just keep it going a little bit, sometimes you can affect change. I'll put it this way. Once you don't, there's no way to influence somebody, affect change, or be a role model.
You're right. You're right. And the last thing I want to do is tell people that they should just cast off. I've changed my way of thinking in my life a lot of times, and sometimes I've had to be corrected. And boy, being corrected, that's difficult. That is difficult. That is like, it's like having a thorn pulled out. You know, you don't want to think, oh, I did something. And I think the best kind of corrected is just when, not when you're corrected to come in line with somebody else's beliefs, but when somebody is pointing out the inconsistencies in your own. Maybe you think yourself to be more compassionate than you are, or more sensitive than you are. So that's the kind that's good, you know. Being corrected when I don't even, you know, I'm trying to think of an instance where somebody, but you know, but I'm all up for learning, and I want to learn about, for instance, okay, so let's say you're visiting another culture, and you decide how much to care. And that's hard, because let's say you go, I'm really going to care. I'm going to go to Japan, let's say, and I'm going to care about my host and maybe even strangers, and I'm going to show that I care. Well, to show that you care, you're going to have some more information, because you might inadvertently do some things that make it look like you don't. And that can be very difficult, because then when you start to learn people's cultures and customs, some of them you might not agree with. And you go, well, wait a minute, you know, I don't know about that. Isn't, you know, hairy bodies and tattoos, isn't that their hang up? Why do I have to worry about that? So there's that. And it can be a difficult thing to navigate. But I try to, I try to just put pride aside altogether. Because I figure that I'm proud of myself for being a brave learner and explorer. So I don't need to be proud of myself for other things that I think are going to be indignities. I believe that if I can deeply internalize my dignity, then the fewer things that make me uncomfortable will be indignities. Does that make sense? You know, it's like, for instance, you go someplace, they're doing some kind of traditional dance, and you know if you do it, you're going to look silly. But you know if you don't do it, it's a diss. And you want to fit in, because maybe you appreciate your host and say, you know what, I'm going to honor them by doing this dance and at the risk of my dignity. And they may laugh at you, but the respect will then transcend the indignity. And I am not afraid to be silly on the radio. I'm not afraid to embarrass myself. I am not afraid to be cringy. I'm not afraid to make you think that I'm, you know, not as clever as I think I am. I'm not afraid to embarrass myself a little bit here and there. Well, that joke wasn't funny, or this thing at all, or he's great, his voice is great, or he thinks he sounds like one of those guys who thinks he's funny. All that, all the things I do that may be me experimenting with how to do things and say things on the radio. All of that, man, I could be embarrassed by it. I could listen back to old shows and say, oh, God, I want to crawl into a hole. What kind of voice am I doing there? And I felt a little bit of that. But I'm telling you that there is a liberating way to live your life. And if your heart is true, then good people will forgive you
your clumsiness. And we all know that. And you do it. I mean, there's nobody, there's nobody listens to this show that doesn't think that, I think. It's that, you know, they know if somebody is a decent person, they don't have to be perfect. You know, we know that we don't, that you can be good company, that you can be a wonderful friend, and you can still be silly, stupid, and occasional maker of bad decisions. Right? Oh, bless you. And I still love you and have a fondness for you. Good God, we're all alive at the same time. You have no idea. The longer you go on, you'll know it. Oh, young people, I love you. Don't go anywhere. Oh, I want everybody, young and old, to listen to the show. It's this opportunity for us all to be together. So we can all just think about, like, it's how crazy this is to be alive, how occasionally lucky, how it vibrates, vacillates between a wonderful blessing and a wonderful curse. Wonderful curse. Just a curse, plain old curse. And how it's so easy and difficult. And how wonderful it feels sometimes to be together. Just being goofy and eating cookout or something. Making food together. I had that go down last weekend, making food with friends. And it was fantastic. And we feed each other, and then they go, I think I had too much to drink. I'm going to take off. All right. Being all right. You got a sober driver? Yeah, I'm good. That kind of thing. Every other. I have good luck with that with friends. About half of them are non-drinkers and like to drive. So everybody who leaves my house is all sober. That's great. And I hope that I'm doing that to you. I hope you have if I make you too stupid listening to the show, which people have said that to me, say, I love your show. It lowers my IQ a little bit. I go, well, probably could have stood to be lowered or at least round down. Like, who wants an IQ? My IQ is at 131. Nah, 130. All right. Also, it's not. Okay. I've been talking to you. I feel like it's 119. All right. And we'll just round it down to 115. Oh, okay. Yeah, that doesn't mean that I think, what's the lowest your IQ can be and still get into an Ivy League school? I think really low. I mean, and really high, too, but I'm just thinking, probably if you're a legacy or something, they'd be like, yeah, we're going to let him in because he's Hardy White's grandnephew. Yeah. And Hardy White didn't go here either. No, I didn't. Oh, bless you. A lot of my schooling was, I think Florida's responsible for 100% of it. So if there's anything that you don't like that I say, and I know you already do, blame Florida. So that's easy. I'm a product of the state. Everything about me, I think. I don't live there anymore. Because why? Well, you just, at some point you have to go. You just do. What happened to me is I was starting to go back to the earth. And that happens when you live in Florida. The earth will start to reclaim you. And you will start to rot and decompose before you're dead. And things will eat you. They'll just blatantly eat you. You're sitting there with friends. You're saying, well, we're just having a couple of drinks sitting outside. And you'll go to get up and half of you is gone. It's already been, goes back to the earth, eaten by things. They've already crapped it out and made it into mushrooms or wherever. And this is just the way it is. Oh, the whole place is a swamp. And it's just steeped in tragedy, too, because people would move there out of greed and go, look at all this land. And he goes, it's not real land, my friends, you know. It's like exactly like that planet in Star Trek where they go, we found Eden. Going back to Eden. Eat some of these plants. Ah, they're muriatic acid. Muriatic acid. That's a fun. That's like pool acid. What's a better acid? I can't think of anything. But anyway, some acid that burns. It's a very strong base. That's maybe what it is. But it's point, it'll kill you. So you should not move to Florida unless you are a herp. So if you're any kind of, you know, if you're a snake or something, go for it. Or some or a frog. And then it's a wonderful place to be. But mammals, not so much. So I left, but I took with me a thing they call Florida education, which is all in quotes. Everything's in quotes. Got my diploma. Everything that you will hear now is quotes around it. And I might have to do them Victor Borga style. Victor Borga style. Like that. I think that's right. Who is Victor Borga? He was a mid-20th century linguist who advocated for the transliteration or articulation or something, or vocalization punctuation. And so he would, he'd say, you know, for period, go, was a comma, there's a quotes or something like that. There's a question mark. And he would, he might have played music as well. And didn't catch on. He got together with the guy that was a proponent of Esperanto. And they just went crazy. I couldn't even tell what they're talking about. But it was beautiful. They say, we want to change language completely. And I feel a little bit like that. And I think, and a lot of people said that. Say, Hardy, you do a thing called weaving. We weave everything together. And then at the end, you think it's going to come back together. And it just frays. It just goes in a million different directions. Absolutely chaos. Like a little league game with little tiny T-ball team where they just don't even know where the bases are. They just run off. That's where your streams of consciousness go. Even a million different directions. And you think they're going to come back to something. Why would they come back? They're enjoying themselves. I don't know why. Wrap it all up? No. Why? Yuck. Leave it unwrapped. Everybody take one. Take what you need. I'm not going to sum things up. I'm not trying to get something through to you. You know, it's a massage. At the end of the massage, you go, all right, now, what's the point? Where were you going with all that? I go, there is no going with all that. Do you feel relaxed? Yeah, but that thing where you're rubbing my run shoulder. Yeah. What'd you mean? I don't mean anything. I want you to relax. So a lot of what I do, I think, is technique. And it might not have any kind of literal meaning. But it's meaningful to you. Because of the way it's delivered. I'm bringing cookies over, and we're eating the cookies together, and when I leave, you're not going to have anything. What you had was the experience of eating cookies with me. I wish I could give you more than that. I wish I was a podcast that told you information about some historic event or some crime or something. But no. The only crime that I'm here to do anything about is the crime of us being cruel to ourselves and cutting off our inability to be good to one another. So be good to yourself, because that's the place to start. And I said, hey, is Arthur. Hey, you are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York, and online at WFMU.org worldwide, around the globe, freeform radio, the way it was designed to be by Dr. Freeform, who invented it all. Bless his heart, if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't be here. I am Hardy White, Miracle Nutrition. I think Mahogany is still coming up because it's a good darn show. Every show is a good show. It's the best radio station in the world, WFMU. And you're the best listeners in the world. And you know more than everybody else. And I love you so much and appreciate you. See you again next week.
Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins' name was Ebony.
To prove to you,
I'm still in love.
Though I try, you seem like you'll never be satisfied. All you seem to care about is who, what, when, and why. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. I just wanna throw it back, back to the day around my way in VA. And everything was cool, and all I had to say was trust me, babe. But now, no,
everything has changed. Will it always, yeah, always be this way? And I know that that is all my fault. One night of pleasure really calls.
It really calls me.
I'm the one so
so proud of you,
so proud of you.
Cause not a lot of guys can do what you do.
What you do.
You stay true to me, so faithful.
So faithful.
So what I gotta do to prove to you
I'm still in love.
And I can't give up, because I refuse to lose your love.
Lose your love.
It's only me and you I'm thinking of.
Thinking of.
And I can't let it end. Can't waste all our love for again, because
everything has changed.
Everything
will always,
has changed.
Always be this way.
Will it always be this way?
That is all my fault.
I know,
when
I know.
Pleasure really calls.
It really calls me.
I'm the one so wrong this time.
This time.
The tables have turned.
Hold on. Still let it go. I can't do it.
without you, you won't hurt no more.
Everything